NRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Voters pass Virginia's redistricting referendum to redraw congressional maps in favor of Democrats. Data centers need more electricity, and residents and environmentalists in central Virginia are pushing back against new transmission line projects. And community-based mediation centers, including the Fairfield Center in Harrisonburg, face increasing financial strain. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, April 22nd. Virginia Democrats have successfully pulled off a response to Republican states redrawing their congressional maps to help Republicans. Voters in Virginia approved a constitutional amendment that could add 4 new seats for Democrats. Radio IQ's Michael Pope reports.
Democrats need 3 seats to take control of the House of Representatives. And now voters in Virginia are approving a mid-decade redistricting that could tilt the November election in favor of Democrats in 4 seats in Virginia. That could mean an end for the congressional careers of Rob Whitman, Jen Kegins, John McGuire, and Ben Klein. Here's Wes Bellamy at Virginia State University.
This really, quote unquote, sticks it to Trump and lets him know that he cannot operate as a dictator and that this is not a dictatorship. He can't just do whatever it is that he wants to do. And I think that this will bring some balance to the nation as a whole, and all eyes on Virginia.
Mark Roselle at George Mason University's Schar School says the results show a stark divide between urban and rural.
There was barely any ex-urban support for this measure, unless we still consider Loudoun County an ex-urb at this point. So it really brings out the divide in Virginia politics in a very striking way.
Voters may have approved of the amendment, but it still faces a legal challenge. The justices of the Supreme Court of Virginia have yet to hear oral arguments in the case, and they could declare the amendment unconstitutional, a move that would keep the existing map in place. Final written arguments are due later this week. Michael Pope.
In a written statement, Governor Abigail Spanberger said voters approved a temporary measure to push back against President Trump, who said he was entitled to more Republican seats in Congress. She also said that she remains committed to ensuring Virginia's bipartisan redistricting commission gets back to work after the 2030 census. But Mark Roselle at George Mason University's Schar School says memories of what happened this week will linger beyond 2030.
Consider when Republicans at some point in the future have power in Virginia politics, and they too want to make a mid-decade constitutional change. There may be a tit for tat down the road, and we're into yet again a really negative pattern of polarization in our politics.
Delegate Terry Kilgore, the Republican leader in the state House, said the results do not mean the end of the fight, noting that a legal challenge is still pending before the Virginia Supreme Court. Virginians can once again take the bus from Harrisonburg to Virginia Beach and back. The Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation has launched the Tidewater Current, an intercity bus route operated by Virginia Breeze. The route will take passengers along the I-64 corridor, making stops in several cities, including Norfolk, Williamsburg, Richmond, Charlottesville, and Stanton. Greyhound had operated a similar route. It shut down during the COVID-19 pandemic. Virginia's electricity demand is rising rapidly, driven largely by data centers in Northern Virginia. As utilities expand the energy grid to keep up, new infrastructure projects are being proposed across central Virginia, drawing pushback from environmentalists and residents in communities such as Fluvanna County. WMRA's Angelie Schindler reports.
Experts say the state hasn't seen the need for power grow this fast in decades. William Shobe is an environmental economist at the University of Virginia. He said the increase in demand is
very unusual. We're hitting rates that we haven't seen since the wild growth days of the 60s.
To keep up, grid operators are planning major infrastructure expansions, both new power plants and transmission lines. One of the largest projects is known as the Valley Link Joshua Falls to Yeet Project, a high-voltage transmission line that would stretch roughly 115 miles across central Virginia, running from an existing substation in Campbell County near Lynchburg to a new substation in Culpeper County. It was approved earlier this year by PJM, the regional grid operator that oversees electricity across 13 states and Washington, D.C., as part of its long-term planning process. The line would operate at 765 kilovolts, an extra high voltage level designed to move large amounts of electricity over long distances. Rob Richardson is the electric transmission communications consultant at Dominion.
We projected that we're going to need twice the amount of energy in about the next 15 years. And so this is just one of the ways that we're proposing to help manage the grid, help manage reliability ultimately. So when you go, you know, over to the wall and you turn your lights switch on in the morning, the lights still come on.
A single line can carry enough power for hundreds of thousands, potentially millions of homes, reducing the need for multiple smaller transmission lines. But critics say the scale of these projects is hard to grasp. Michael Barber is a senior energy infrastructure policy analyst with the Piedmont Environmental Council.
It's a 200-foot right-of-way across about 115 miles, which is, you know, it's going to convert somewhere over 2,600 acres of land to utility right-of-way, land that's currently forested, currently farmed, you know, has some other beneficial use to these localities. So, I mean, the scale is just huge.
Developers describe it as a kind of backbone for the grid, moving electricity from where it's generated to where demand is growing. That demand is rising fastest in Northern Virginia, but the infrastructure needed to support it is expanding outward into more rural parts of the state. Both Barber and Shobe say that growth is being driven largely by data centers. Related proposals include the Valley North Transmission Line, which would extend hundreds of miles through West Virginia and Maryland, along with new substations and additional transmission corridors across the region. Alongside new transmission lines, new power generation is also being proposed. In Fluvanna County, local officials recently approved a second natural gas power plant, known as the Expedition Generating Station. The project, proposed by Nebraska-based company Tenaska, would be built on a 50-acre portion of a larger 450-acre site near Scottsville, directly across from the company's existing plant. Once operational, it would generate about 1,500 megawatts of electricity, enough to power roughly 1.5 million homes. The Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors approved the project in a 4-1 vote, overriding the Planning Commission, which had previously found it inconsistent with the county's long-term vision. That decision followed months of public debate. More than 1,000 residents signed petitions opposing the project, raising concerns about air pollution, noise, and long-term health impacts. The project still requires additional approvals from state regulators, including the Virginia State Corporation Commission and the Department of Environmental Quality, before construction can begin. Ashley Crocker lives in Fluvanna County and says she's concerned about how Valley Link and Tenaska could affect her family.
Yeah. The last couple of weeks, it's really seemed like Fluvanna is trying to poison my kids.
She's especially concerned about air quality and long-term health impacts, particularly for her daughter, who has asthma. She says it's even led her to consider leaving the county.
It's really hard for us because we've built this great community. We love our friends here. We love our neighborhood. We love the life that we've built here. And that's definitely something we're concerned about, but like it would be worth it to us for our kids to be healthy.
Researchers say power plants, including natural gas facilities, emit pollutants like nitrogen oxides and fine particulate matter, or PM2.5, which are known to affect air quality and human health. Supporters of the project say those concerns have to be weighed against broader energy needs. Tony O'Brien is chair of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors.
Grid reliability is a real issue. And when you look at the impact of the tax revenue that was being offered, to me it was a pretty straightforward decision.
O'Brien voted to approve the power plant, citing both economic benefits and worst-case blackout scenarios, like the 2021 Texas power crisis when millions lost electricity during a winter storm. State officials later confirmed more than 200 deaths, though some analyses have estimated a higher toll. As Virginia's energy needs continue to grow, the tension between Northern Virginia's data center expansion and rural communities' concerns isn't going away. For WMRA, I'm Anjali Schindler.
We've posted a longer version of this story and links to more information at WMRA.org and on our app. Community-based mediation centers, including the Fairfield Center in Harrisonburg, face a difficult financial reality as payments for court-ordered referrals have stagnated. WMRA's Randy Behage reports.
The Fairfield Center's 24 mediators deal in resolution, sitting down with families, parents, tenants and landlords, and church and community groups who are at odds with one another and trying to find a mutually acceptable path forward.
This is a collaborative process. Every voice is heard, and you've got somebody neutral who can reality test whether something is actually doable.
Noel Levan is a family mediator and parenting educator at the center, as well as president of its board of directors. The organization usually takes in between 400 and 500 cases a year, many of which are referred to the center by judges. They have contracts with the court systems of Shenandoah, Page, Harrisonburg, Rockingham, Stanton, Augusta, Waynesboro, and Rockbridge.
The reason that so many judges like mediation is because the clients know their story.
Christine Polson is the executive director of Resolution Virginia, a network of the state's 7 community mediation centers.
A judge only has a limited amount of time to look at your paperwork, look at you, and make a decision about your life.
The vast majority of the Fairfield Center's cases are family cases. This can involve custody agreements or child and spousal support, but Levan says parenting plans are the most common issue. This is a legal document that lays out all the logistics of co-parenting a child.
It addresses how they're going to deal with any kind of an emergency, who is going to be available for both parents in terms of childcare. Are there people in either parent's families who we do not want this child to be around because of whatever those issues might be? We have to address things that people don't want to necessarily talk about, but children's safety is paramount.
Some clients choose mediation on their own initiative without a judge's referral. Lori Meir is a former client who used the Fairfield Center's services for her divorce. Her ex consented to WMRA sharing about this legally confidential process. Meir said mediation was cheaper than going through attorneys and gave them a chance to talk things out.
They explained it really well, I think, in the phone interviews, and so we kind of knew what to expect when we got there.
After separate phone interviews, they sat down for one in-person session that took about 2 or 3 hours.
It was obviously emotional, but I think that they prepped us well so that it didn't get too emotional. They were effective in helping us, I guess, figure out one thing that we weren't agreeing on and moving us along. But the overall process is great.
Any problem where the parties are working in good faith to try and solve it is a candidate for mediation.
Tom Dominoski is a Harrisonburg-based consumer protection lawyer and former board president at the Fairfield Center. He previously worked as a legal aid lawyer in Farmville, where he occasionally represented parents in custody cases.
Basically, the legal system creates two teams in order to find out which team can find out the most truth about the past. So it's a competition. It's what I've been trained to do. It's my profession. And it is absolutely the worst way to figure out what's better for a child in the future.
The Fairfield Center offers a sliding scale for private mediations. The state court system pays for mediation services referred by a judge, but only $120 for most appointments. That rate was set about 10 years ago, and even that was only a $20 raise from the year 2000. If that amount had kept up with inflation, it would have nearly doubled by now.
The amount that's paid doesn't meet either the personnel costs or the overhead costs of the center. And that's true for the other centers in Virginia as well.
It's the rent, it's the phones, it's the computer services, it's the database outcome tracker, it's the hourly wage. We would love to be able to pay people for what they're really worth.
Polson says several mediation centers have closed over the years due to inadequate funding in Norfolk, Fredericksburg, 2 in Woodstock, and 2 in Richmond. Meanwhile, the numbers of court-referred mediations across the state are gradually climbing back towards pre-pandemic levels. But locally, Levan says their court-referred caseload has been steady.
I think it's solely because we have judges who have been advocating for mediation and they are influencing other judges.
Regardless of how clients find their way to the center, the process can be transformational. LeVan recounts one group of sisters fighting over what to do with their late parents' property who
came in hating each other and left just hugging each other because of the misunderstandings among them were clarified. It can be life-altering.
The Fairfield Center is one of more than 150 local nonprofits fundraising through the Great Community Give on Wednesday. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
You can find links to more information at WMRA.org and on our app. Well, the General Assembly is about to return to the Capitol and consider hundreds of amendments from the governor. Michael Pope shines some light on one involving solar energy.
The future is about to get a lot brighter for solar energy. Or at least that's the intention of Senator Schuyler Van Valkenburg, a Democrat from Henrico County. He has a bill that would force local governments to consider all applications for solar projects rather than having a blanket denial.
We see these kind of ideological fights about solar where we see localities talking about whether they should ban them or not. Where I think a much more productive conversation is if you take each project up one at a time, you're talking to the property owner, you're looking at the economics of a project, you're seeing if it makes sense, if it has good standards. It's trying to turn down the temperature a little bit, maybe get a little bit more solar energy online.
Local governments oppose the bill, saying they should have the ability to handle land use the way they want to. Joe Lurch is director of local government policy at the Virginia Association of Counties.
If somebody wanted to make an application for a utility scale solar, even though it's not an allowed use in an industrial zone, you would have to review that and go through the process. And then if you wanted to deny it, you could. And so I think this is interfering with the overall land use and comprehensive planning at the local level just for this one use.
The governor made some technical amendments to the bill, and Senator Van Valkenburg says he'll accept them as friendly amendments when lawmakers reconvene this week. Michael Pope.
Finally today, we love dinosaurs. There's a new species of dinosaur nicknamed a murder muppet. It was discovered by an undergraduate student at Virginia Tech. As Radio IQ's Roxy Todd reports, his discovery may change what scientists previously believed about early dinosaurs.
The dinosaur's scientific name is Tychotherates buccalentus. It's one of the oldest known meat-eating dinosaurs, explains Simba Srivastav, a senior at Virginia Tech.
It's this really short, rounded face, like a bulldog, or, cats have very short faces, but it's got a face full of sharp teeth and these big eyebrows, so murder muppet, I think, is pretty accurate.
The murder muppet existed long before T-Rex, during the Triassic period. It's part of a group of dinosaurs scientists had believed went extinct much earlier, but this discovery changes that.
It may make us reconsider this larger pattern we thought we knew about dinosaur evolution.
At the end of the Triassic period, most animals across the world went extinct, likely from a series of volcanic eruptions that released gases.
It seemed to wipe out all the large and medium land animals, except for dinosaurs.
Thanks to Srivastav's discovery, there's now evidence to suggest the murder muppet may have been killed off around this time, too. Srivastav says he's often dreamed of one day naming a dinosaur, but never imagined he'd have the opportunity as an undergraduate student. In Blacksburg, I'm Roxy Todd.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Wednesday.